Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look great. What have you been doing?
I found Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe the same active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s for 80 to 90% less without insurance. All on mine, shipped right to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's care to #250.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Story one, I've never told anyone about this before. Not like this. Not in detail, but for some reason, I need to now. Maybe it's because it's been years, or maybe it's because I'm still haunted by it. I'm not sure, but I'll tell it as I remember it, exactly how it happened. I grew up in a quiet town in the north of Switzerland, not far from the mountains, the kind of place where everyone knows each other and nothing strange ever really happens. But there was one thing about our town that stood out: the old military bunkers scattered across the hills, remnants from the Second World War. They were eerie, abandoned, and overgrown with ivy and moss. We'd all seen them before, but they were mostly just a part of the landscape, something you knew was there, but never thought too much about. When I was about 7 or 8 years old, my three friends and I decided to explore one of them. It wasn't the closest bunker, but it was the one that looked the most intimidating, one perched atop a hill in the middle of a dense, dark forest. There was something about it that always made me shiver, even when we were just walking past it on our way to the village. But that day we were curious. We were kids after all, and curiosity always won out. We didn't even really have a plan. We just walked up the hill and found the entrance, a heavy steel door that looked like it hadn't been touched in decades. It was locked tight, but we weren't going to let that stop us. We scoured the area, and after a few minutes, one of my friends found a massive log, long and thick enough to use as a battering ram. We laughed nervously, thinking this was just another game, another adventure we'd tell our parents about when we got home. We slammed the log against the door, over and over, but no matter how hard we hit it, it wouldn't budge. We could feel the weight of the door, its age, its coldness, like it was daring us to give up. But we didn't. After what felt like an eternity, we stopped, panting and covered in sweat. That's when I noticed it, a small peephole about 10 centimeters wide hidden in the metal. I hadn't seen it before. Maybe it had been covered by the moss, or maybe I was just too focused on the door. But it was there, and for some reason, I felt an overwhelming urge to look through it. I bent down and peered inside, but all I could see was darkness. The hallway beyond was long, too long for me to see the end. It felt like the darkness stretched on forever. I could make out shapes, maybe rooms on either side, but they were too far to identify. For a moment, I stood there, staring into the blackness, unsure what to think. My friends were behind me, fidgeting with the log, still half-heartedly trying to break down the door. That's when one of them, the braver one of the group, spoke up. "Hey, there's a light," he said. His voice was quiet, almost like he was unsure whether he should be saying it out loud. "A light?" I asked, and startled. "I didn't see any light." "Yeah," he replied, his voice a little more confident now. "A small one, right at the end of the hallway." I didn't believe him. I took a step back, pushing him aside, and looked again. I don't know why, but this time I felt a chill run down my spine. The light was there, but it wasn't small. It was a flashlight, its beam pointing directly at me, and behind it, I could see the faint silhouette of a figure, a person, or something. I froze. My heart hammered in my chest and a feeling of dread settled in my stomach. I didn't know what to say. My mind was racing, trying to process what I was seeing, but it was impossible. There was no way someone could have been inside. The door had been locked. The only way in was through that door. I stepped back, suddenly feeling the weight of the situation, the cold sweat on my skin. I didn't want to look again. I didn't want to know what else I might see. But then, just as I was about to turn away, it happened. A knock from inside the bunker. A loud, sharp, deliberate knock, like someone or something was banging on the door from the inside. I don't know what happened next. I couldn't think. My body reacted before my mind could catch up. I turned and ran. I ran faster than I ever had in my life, straight down the hill and through the woods, not stopping until I reached my house. I slammed the door behind me and locked it, my hands trembling so badly I could barely get the key into the lock. I don't know how long I stayed there, staring at the door, waiting for something, anything to happen, but nothing did. The night passed and I didn't sleep a wink. I couldn't. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw the figure in the hallway, the flashlight beam cutting through the darkness, and the knock. Always the knock. The next day at school, I met up with my friends. We didn't talk about it at first. We didn't even mention the bunker. But later, after lunch, we started to talk. We tried to make sense of it. It must have been older kids, one of my friends suggested. They must have been playing a prank on us. We all agreed that it was the most logical explanation. It had to be, right? But a week later, we went back. We didn't want to, not really, but we had to know. We had to find out if there was any chance anyone else had been there. But when we arrived, we saw something that made my blood run cold. The welded connection on the door, the one that was supposed to keep it locked, was rusty and old, but it wasn't broken, not at all. The door hadn't been opened, not by anyone. We didn't say anything to each other. We didn't have to. We just turned around and walked away silently. None of us ever spoke about the bunker again. Story 2. It was years ago in the middle of a cold winter, in a quiet suburban neighborhood where nothing ever seemed to stir past midnight. My mother's house was old, built long before I was born, but it always felt like home. I remember the living room was small, cozy with the soft hum of the heater in the background, and the scent of coffee that lingered from earlier in the day. It was the kind of house that always made you feel safe, even though, looking back, maybe it wasn't as safe as I thought. That night, my mother had already gone to bed, and I was sprawled on the couch, wrapped in a blanket, eyes half-lidded as the TV flickered a dull light across the room. My brother was out with friends, as he often was, and I was left alone to mind the house. I don't remember exactly when I fell asleep, but I do remember the strange feeling that woke me. The house was still. I could hear nothing but the faint sound of my breathing and the low creak of the wooden floors in the kitchen. But then, something else, a shift in the air, the kind of subtle change that makes your skin crawl. My eyes snapped open, and it was as if everything had gone silent, like the house itself was holding its breath. There, standing over me, was a figure. It wasn't my brother, I knew that right away. He was taller, but this figure, it was someone else. Someone different. His face was obscured by a bandana, a dark cloth wrapped around his head. His stance was still, but there was something unsettling about it, like he was watching me too closely. I could barely see his features, just his shape, his broad shoulders, the shadow of his presence in the dim light of the living room. I wanted to scream, but nothing came out. The air felt thick, like I was choking on it. My mind raced, and instinctively, I thought it must be my brother, though the bandana made no sense. He'd never worn one before, and the way the figure stood, too silent, too deliberate, was wrong. "Mark," I whispered, my voice barely audible. My brother's name felt strange on my tongue in that moment. No response. The figure didn't move, but I could feel the cold of the room pressing down on me. I could feel my heartbeat pounding in my chest. I was frozen, unable to turn away or make a sound, as if my body refused to acknowledge the presence in front of me. The seconds felt like hours. Then slowly, too slowly, he bent down. My body went into overdrive. my fight-or-flight instincts screaming at me to move, but I couldn't. He reached for the blanket that was draped over me and began to pull it up, tucking it around me with deliberate care, as though this was something he had done 1,000 times before. I remember my eyes darting around the room, looking for anything I could use to defend myself, but there was nothing. The only thing in my line of sight was the dull glow of the TV, its images dancing eerily in the background. As he finished covering me up, he paused. For a moment, I thought he might speak, but he didn't. Instead, he stood there, silent, watching me as I lay there trembling beneath the blanket. It felt like I was caught in some nightmare, unable to wake up. I don't know how long it lasted, but at some point, the figure slowly turned and walked toward the hallway, vanishing into the shadows of the house. I was left there, paralyzed, my mind racing to make sense of what had just happened. Was I dreaming? Was it my brother after all? But then why the bandana? And why would he cover me up like that? I waited, listening, trying to convince myself that it had all been some weird half-dream. But when I gathered the courage to sit up, the blanket was perfectly in place around me. Every fold, every corner tucked in. No one had ever tucked me in like that. No one. I didn't sleep the rest of the night. I spent hours staring at the door to the hallway, every little creak of the house making...
If you're running a retail business, don't let disorganized order fulfillment cause chaos. Use ShipStation instead. From running a business out of your garage to multiple warehouses, ShipStation is ideal for every phase of your growth. Save time with one login for all your stores and by automating tasks. Plus, you'll get the best shipping rates from global carriers. Calm the chaos with the shipping software that delivers. Start a free trial at ShipStation.com/audio. That's ShipStation.com/audio.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
Me jump, my heart racing, but nothing happened. No one came back. The next morning, my brother was the first one to come downstairs. I had barely slept, my body still stiff from fear, and I was too shaken to even look at him right away. I didn't want to believe what I thought had happened. I tried to act normal. I walked into the kitchen trying to shake off the cold dread that still gripped me, but it wasn't normal, not at all. "Hey, Mark," I started casually, though my voice cracked a bit. "You didn't come in last night, did you?" He stopped what he was doing, his brow furrowing in confusion. "What do you mean? You didn't come into the living room and cover me up?" I asked, trying to sound as though it was just a silly question, but my heart was hammering in my chest. He looked at me, completely perplexed. "Number I came in, went straight to my room. You were already asleep when I got home." My stomach sank. He wasn't joking. He wasn't even making it up. He had no idea what I was talking about. "But I saw someone," I stammered, my words catching in my throat. "I thought it was you." Mark shook his head, bewildered, and that's when it hit me. He wasn't lying. He hadn't been in the living room. Neither had my mother. I turned to her, but she was just as confused, denying any involvement in what I'd experienced. But someone had been there. Someone who wasn't supposed to be. Story 3. It was the summer of 2005, and I was just out of high school. A group of friends and I were given the incredible opportunity to do an archaeological dig at a Roman fort in South Shields, UK. I'd never been out of the US before, so when the chance came up, I jumped at it. After the dig, we decided to take a trip to Edinburgh for a bit of sightseeing. I'd heard so much about the city, and it felt surreal to be there, walking through its ancient streets, enjoying the old world charm. But the story I'm about to tell you isn't about the Roman fort, or even Edinburgh itself. No, it starts on our way back to our hotel one evening. We were heading out for a night of drinks, maybe to shake off the dust of the dig, when the atmosphere suddenly shifted. We were walking down a cobbled street, the kind you only see in old cities, the lamps casting long shadows on the ground. We'd been chatting and laughing, half drunk, when I noticed a group ahead of us, three people standing near an alleyway, just staring at us, a man and two women. They were impossibly striking. Not just good-looking, but unnerving in a way that made my heart skip a beat. I've never been someone who gets paranoid, but I could feel this sudden tension coil inside me. The man's eyes, sharp, almost glassy blue, caught mine for a split second, and I looked away quickly, feeling a strange knot twist in my stomach. There was something about them. They didn't look like normal people. They were dressed in all black, so perfectly fitted, it looked almost like they were dressed for some kind of Gothic fashion show. But there was no mistake. They were real, and they were standing directly in our path. As they drew closer, I couldn't help but feel this overwhelming sense of anxiety crash over me. I tried to shake it off, but it felt like something was wrong. Something wasn't right. I could feel my breath quicken. One of the women, tall with jet black hair, looked straight at us. Her eyes, those piercing blue eyes, locked onto ours. It wasn't like the way someone would look at you casually. It was more like she was looking through you. "Where are you all headed?" she asked in a voice that sent chills down my spine. It was calm but sharp. She didn't seem like someone who cared whether we were comfortable or not. It was more like she already knew where we were going. "We're just heading back to our hotel," I said, my voice wavering. I wasn't even sure why I was talking to her. There was something about her that made every word feel like a mistake. My friends were standing there, not knowing what to say, just staring. "What brings you here?" she asked again, her tone still too calm. The other woman, standing next to her, said nothing. She just stared, her face impassive. But I could see the faintest glimmer of amusement in her eyes. "We're tourists," one of my friends finally spoke up. But as he did, the man, who had been silent this whole time, shifted toward us. "You should leave. Go back home. Avoid the underground trains and buses in London," he said, his voice low but deliberate. Everyone in our group just froze. I remember that exact moment. It felt like the entire world held its breath. It wasn't a warning. It was a command. "Excuse me," I said, feeling an
"You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?"
"Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today." "Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?"
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
An uneasy laugh catches in my throat. "What do you mean? The city will be dangerous for you. You won't be safe," the woman with the jet black hair added, her eyes still locked on mine. She didn't blink. "The sooner you leave, the better." I opened my mouth to ask what she meant, but before I could speak, the group turned away, like they were done with us. They didn't wait for a response. They simply started walking off, their footsteps eerily quiet on the cobblestones. We all just stood there, utterly stunned. My friend Dave tried to shake it off. "What the hell was that about?" he muttered, but his voice wasn't as confident as usual. I couldn't shake the feeling that something had happened in those brief moments. The warning, the certainty in their voices. Something about it had felt almost predatory. We made our way back to the hotel in silence, the weight of what had just happened hanging over us like a storm cloud. As we got to our rooms, I couldn't help but feel the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. I couldn't explain why, but I felt like we had just narrowly avoided something dark. The next morning, we took an early flight to London, a bit uneasy from the encounter. We were all eager to see the sights of the city, but that warning, those eyes, kept coming back to me. We grabbed a cab from the airport and made our way to the hotel. The sun was bright, the air thick with the usual London smog, and everything seemed normal, until we reached our destination. That's when we learned about the bombings, the London tube bombings. It had happened just a few hours before we arrived. As we were unpacking, my phone rang with a news alert: explosions in multiple tube stations. The world suddenly felt like it had shifted. The news described a scene of chaos, panic, and destruction. I sat there frozen. I couldn't help but think about the warning the night before. "Stay away from the tube," the woman had said. "It would be best to get out of the country as soon as possible." We hadn't known what they meant, but somehow they had known. To this day, I have no explanation for it. I still think about that moment in Edinburgh, about the look in their eyes. What kind of people can predict something like that? Or was it something else? Something more? We got out of the country as quickly as we could, and the rest of our trip passed without incident. Story 4. It happened a few years ago, and to this day, I can't explain it. I still don't know how it happened, but I can't forget the details. Not a single one. It's one of those things that stays with you. The kind of thing that messes with your mind when you're alone, and it never really leaves. I was living in an old apartment at the time. Nothing fancy, but it had its charm. It was in an old building, the kind where every creak and groan of the floorboards makes you wonder if someone else is there, just out of sight. It had its own history, one of those buildings where you could feel the weight of its age. I had moved there for a fresh start, hoping to get away from the noise of the city, but it wasn't as peaceful as I'd imagined. It was one of those mornings where you wake up with a start, disoriented, still halfway between sleep and wakefulness. The room was dark, but I could hear the sound of rain tapping against the window. It wasn't unusual. This was northern England, after all, where the weather could turn on a dime. I lay there for a moment, blinking, trying to shake off the haze of sleep. Then I felt it, a cold drop, right on my eyelash. I wiped it away instinctively, but something didn't feel right. The room was too quiet, too still. It's a weird thing to explain, but I felt a strange tension in the air, like something was out of place. I was fully awake now, wide-eyed and panicked, but I couldn't figure out why. My hand went instinctively to my eye, brushing it again. That's when I felt the wetness. And it wasn't water. It wasn't just a drop of rain from the window. It was blood. Cold, dark red blood. My heart stopped for a second. I didn't know what to do. I sat up in bed, staring into the darkness. But the only sound was the rain. I quickly wiped my eye again, thinking I'd just imagined it, that maybe I had scratched myself or that something from the roof had leaked down. But no, it wasn't just a drop of blood. It was fresh. I turned to look at the ceiling. There was nothing. No hole, no crack in the plaster. The roof was fine as it always was. I felt my pulse hammer in my chest. I looked around the room. The walls were as they had been when I'd fallen asleep. No signs of anything strange? Nothing. But the blood was there. I checked the sheets. Nothing. No sign of a cut. No stain. Just a cold drop of blood on my eye, out of nowhere. It didn't make sense. My mind was racing now. My first thought was that maybe I had been dreaming, that I hadn't actually felt the blood, that it was some kind of sleep-induced hallucination. But when I wiped my eye and looked at my hand, blood, real blood, I could taste it in my mouth from where I'd wiped it on my face. I sat up fully now, shaking with the realization that this wasn't something I could just brush off. I've lived in that building long enough to know that strange things can happen. Old buildings hold secrets. The kind that don't make sense in the light of day, but still make your hair stand on end when you're alone. But this was something else. It wasn't a creak in the floorboards or a draft that made the door swing open. It was something that had come from me, something I didn't understand, and worse, something I didn't have control over. I had to get up. I had to move. My legs were shaking as I swung them off the side of the bed. The room still dark except for the dim glow coming through the rain-streaked window. I grabbed my phone off the bedside table, but I wasn't sure who I could call. What could I even say? There was no answer. I stood up and walked to the door, but the moment I touched the handle, I froze. Something felt off. The air felt heavy, suffocating. I pulled my hand back from the door, as if something had grabbed me. But there was nothing there. I stepped forward cautiously and went to check the window, hoping for some kind of explanation. Maybe the wind had blown something in, but there was no broken glass, no sign of damage. The rain was still falling steadily outside, the world outside just as normal as it had always been. Then I heard it, a knock. It came from inside the walls, not the kind of noise that comes from pipes or old wooden beams. It was rhythmic, deliberate, knock. Knock, knock. I felt the hair on the back of my neck stand up. My heart was hammering in my chest, and for the first time since I had moved in, I was certain that I was not alone in that room. I moved closer to the wall, pressing my ear against it, but the knocking stopped as suddenly as it had started. I pulled away, a cold sweat breaking out across my skin. I glanced around the room once more, but nothing had changed. The door was still closed, the window untouched. Then I heard it. A voice, faint, like it was coming from behind the walls, whispering. It wasn't clear, not at first, but I could make out a few words. It was too quiet to hear properly, but it was there, unmistakable. My legs went weak, and I stumbled back. The voice stopped, but the blood on my face, that cold, horrifying blood, was still there. I didn't stay much longer. I grabbed my keys, locked the door behind me, and fled. I didn't even care about my stuff. Whatever had happened there, I knew it wasn't something I wanted to stick around and figure out. I still don't know what happened that night. I don't know if I'll ever have an explanation. The blood, the voice, the knocking. It doesn't make sense, and it never will. I moved out not long after. Story 5. I've lived in this house for a little over 3 years now. A small old place on the edge of town, just about 100 yards from the church with the bell tower. It's a place I've grown used to, but there's something about it, something I've never been able to shake. It's not the house itself, it's more the feeling, like something is always just out of view, lurking in the shadows, but never quite showing itself. In winter, the days get dark early, and the church bells chime at 6 p.m. every evening. Six single chimes, every year like clockwork. At first, it didn't seem strange. It was just part of the routine, a comforting background to the evenings. But then there was the smell. It started innocently enough. Just once or twice I'd notice it in the air. A strange scent, like a mixture of sweet and sour, dark and cold, wet and dry. At first I thought it was the winter dampness or maybe the old house settling, but it was different. It wasn't quite like anything I'd ever smelled before. I could never quite describe it, even now. The closest I can get is that it felt wrong, unnatural. It was never consistent, never lingered longer than 30 seconds, and always happened at 6 p.m., right after the church bells rang. As the chimes echoed through the town, the smell would hit me. I tried to ignore it. My girlfriend and I got used to it. Even the dog stopped reacting after a while. But there was something about it that gnawed at me, something that didn't sit right. I thought maybe it was the house. It was old after all. Maybe it had something to do with the way the air moved around here, the way the wind carried the scent from the churchyard or the graveyard. I don't know. I convinced myself that it was just an oddity of living in an old house near an even older church. But then one evening, a few weeks ago, something changed. It was a typical cold winter evening. The sun had already set, and the house was wrapped in shadow. The wind howled outside, the only sound beside the ticking of the clock. I was sitting on the couch, scrolling through my phone, while my girlfriend was in the kitchen making tea. The dog was curled up at my feet, resting peacefully. Then, just like every night before, the church bells rang. Six chimes. Ding, 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 ding. And that was when I smelled it. This time, though, it was different. It wasn't subtle. It didn't come and go in the usual brief burst. It was heavy, like it was pressing down on the entire house, suffocating the air. The scent flooded the room, so thick I could taste it. It made me gag. I stood up, almost instinctively, as if to escape the pressure. My girlfriend came out of the kitchen, looking at me with confusion. "Are you okay?" she asked, frowning. I don't know," I muttered, but I couldn't explain. The smell was overpowering, filling the room like it was coming from inside the walls. I could feel my skin prickle, my heart racing, but I didn't know why. My mind screamed at me that this was just a smell, nothing more, just a smell. But it didn't feel like that. It felt wrong. She shrugged and went back to the kitchen. I stood there for a moment longer, staring at the door, my heart thumping in my chest as if waiting for something. My mind was racing, jumping from one explanation to another, trying to make sense of the feeling crawling under my skin. Maybe it was the dampness in the walls. Maybe it was the wind carrying something from the churchyard. But as the minutes passed, the smell didn't fade. It hung in the air, thick, suffocating, like something was trying to push its way into the house, something that didn't belong. Then just as suddenly as it had come, it was gone. The air was still again. The pressure lifted. I looked at my girlfriend, and she didn't seem to notice anything. She was humming as she finished making tea. The dog, still curled up on the floor, barely even twitched. But I couldn't shake it. Something had changed. I knew it deep down, but I couldn't explain why or how. I couldn't even talk about it because I wasn't sure I could make sense of it myself. The next day, I went out for a walk, trying to clear my head. I passed by the church, the bell tower towering over me, its stones weathered and worn by centuries of time. The churchyard was silent, just the rustle of wind through the dead leaves. I stood there for a while, staring at the old stonework, and that's when I noticed it. A faint smell in the air, like that same mix of sweet and sour, dark and cold. It wasn't as strong as it had been the night before, but it was there. I couldn't tell if it was coming from the church itself or if it was just the wind, but it made my skin crawl. Something in me wanted to turn and run, but I stayed. I couldn't help myself. When I got back home, I decided to do something I'd avoided until then. I talked to the landlord about the house. We'd never gotten much information from him before, and now I needed to know. Maybe he knew something I didn't. I called him, and as I spoke, I could hear the hesitation in his voice. "Nothing strange ever happened here," he said. "No reason to think there's anything wrong with the place." But then he added, "There's an old story. You might not believe it, but the church bell tower, it's said that it's haunted. The bell has a history of ringing on its own sometimes, usually at 6 p.m., but not like you'd think. It's more of a sign of something." I felt a chill run down my spine. The words didn't quite make sense, but they hung in the air, heavy with the weight of something unsaid. "Something?" I asked, my voice barely above a whisper. He paused. "Don't ask me what it is. Some things are better left untouched." I hung up the phone, feeling the same weight in the pit of my stomach. The next evening, as the bells rang, I felt it again. The smell, the pressure, the feeling that something was there, waiting. But this time, I wasn't alone. My girlfriend had gone to bed early, and the dog was with her. I was alone in the living room when the bells chimed at 6 p.m., and then the smell hit me again, stronger than before. It was almost unbearable, and that's when I heard it, a whisper, soft, barely audible, but unmistakable. "Leave!" It was not from inside the house. It came from outside, from the direction of the churchyard. I didn't go outside to check. I didn't even move. I couldn't. I just sat there, frozen as the smell lingered, and the wind howled outside. I don't know what it was, but I know it wasn't normal. It's not something I can explain away. It wasn't just a smell, just a trick of the wind. There's something wrong with this place. Story 6. It happened when I was 14, during an overnight stay at a friend's house. There were five of us, all kids from the same small, close-knit town. Except for one. He was the cousin of the kid who lived there, someone none of us had met before. My friend's older sister, Amy, who was 16, was babysitting us while their parents were out for the evening. She was the kind of teenager who always had this air of mischief about her, like she was just waiting for the chance to get into some kind of trouble. After dinner, she pulled out an old box from the back of a cupboard. Inside was a Ouija board. Back then, these things were sold as a game. You could pick one up from the toy store like it was a Monopoly set. To Amy, it was just a chance to mess with us, to scare the life out of a bunch of kids who didn't know better. "All right," she said, setting it up on the coffee table in the living room. "Let's see which one of you little liars gets caught first." We all laughed nervously, but sat down in a circle around the board. The lights were dim. She'd only left a single lamp on in the corner. At first, it was just harmless fun. She asked us stupid questions, like whether we'd ever kissed anyone or stolen candy. The planchette would slide to yes or no, and everyone giggled. But there was something off. The air felt heavy, like the room had gotten smaller, tighter. Amy must have noticed it too, because her tone changed. She leaned forward, her voice dropping an octave, and said, "All right, let's get serious. If there's anyone here with us, show yourself." The words hung in the air like smoke. For a few seconds, nothing happened. We all glanced at each other, nervous grins fading. Then, without warning, a framed picture of Amy and her brother fell from the wall and hit the floor. We screamed, all of us, even Amy. She shot up and turned on the main light, her face pale but determined. "It's fine," she said, trying to sound like she was still in control. "It was just gravity or something. But we can't stop now. Whoever that was, we need to find out what they want." I wanted to leave. Every instinct in my body was telling me to get up and walk out the door, but I didn't. None of us did. Amy had this way of making you feel like you'd be a coward if you didn't go along with her plans. We sat back down, and the planchette started moving again. This time, it was different. Before, it had been jerky and slow, like someone was obviously pushing it. Now it glided smoothly, almost like it had a mind of its own. "Are you in the room with us?" Amy asked. The planchette moved to YES. "Are you a man?" "Number." "Do you need help?" "No." "What's your name?" The planchette spelled out S-A-R-A-H. I felt my stomach drop. There was something chilling about seeing the letters appear, one by one, like someone or something was right there with us. "All right, Sarah," Amy said, her voice trembling now. "Tell us a secret." The planchette paused, then spelled out F-L-I-P-A-C-O-I-N. "What?" someone whispered. Amy's brother Mark got up and grabbed a 10-pence coin from the kitchen. "Here," he said, holding it up. "I'll do it." He tossed the coin high into the air. We all watched as it spun, catching the light. Then as it fell, it slowed. It was as if time itself had paused. The coin stopped spinning and dropped straight down onto the table, landing perfectly on its edge. No bounce, no wobble, just still. No one spoke. The silence was suffocating. My chest felt tight, and I couldn't look away from the coin. It stood there, impossibly balanced, like some unseen hand had placed it there. Then the planchette moved again. The letters came quickly now, almost too fast to follow. At first they seemed random, but then Amy gasped. "They're initials," she said. She was right. The board spelled out the full initials of every person in the room, including Amy's three middle names. No one outside her family knew them, not even her cousin. "Who's doing this?" Mark whispered, his voice cracking. The planchette didn't answer. It paused, then began to move again, spelling out three final words. C-H-I-L-D-R-E-N-S-T-O-P-N-O-W. "Stop what?" Amy asked, but the board didn't respond. Suddenly, the room felt colder. The lamp flickered, and the shadows in the corners of the room seemed to stretch and twist. "I swear I saw something move just for a second. A figure, tall and thin, standing by the window. I shot to my feet. We need to stop this, now." Amy hesitated, her bravado finally cracking. She grabbed the board, shoving it back into the box. "It's just a stupid game," she muttered, more to herself than to us. But it didn't feel like a game. Not anymore. We didn't sleep that night. None of us could bring ourselves to talk about what happened. Not even the coin, which we left on the table where it stood, still balanced on its edge. The next morning, when Amy's parents came home, the coin was gone. Amy swore she hadn't touched it. So did the rest of us. I haven't touched a Ouija board since. Whatever we contacted that night, it wasn't a game, and it didn't want to be found. Story 7. I've never been the kind of person to believe in the paranormal. My feet have always been firmly planted in logic, science, and things I can see, touch, or verify. But one night, one singular moment, has left me questioning everything. My name's Ben. I live in the north of Switzerland now, but at the time I was back in Massachusetts. My best friend Mark has always been into ghost hunting. I used to go along just to keep him company or for a laugh. I liked the technical aspect, setting up the recorders, calibrating the EMF meters, and working with the sound equipment afterward. It was something different, and it broke up the monotony of work and life. One night, Mark convinced me to head out with him to an abandoned farmhouse deep in the woods. I can't even remember how he found it. Probably one of those ghost hunting forums he loved to haunt. It was miles from anything remotely resembling civilization. No streetlights, no paved roads, just a dirt trail leading to a crumbling, forgotten shell of a building. The kind of place that didn't feel like it belonged in the modern world. We got there just as the sun dipped below the trees, painting the sky a bruised orange. The house stood there, sagging and lifeless, with its roof partially caved in. The windows were long gone, and the door hung awkwardly on rusted hinges. "Ready to meet some spirits?" Mark asked, grinning like a kid on Halloween. I rolled my eyes. "Sure, let's meet Casper and his friends." We set up quickly, audio recorders in every room, an infrared camera in the hallway, and a couple of motion sensors on the stairs. The house didn't have power, so we relied on our flashlights and some battery-operated lanterns. Mark did his usual routine, asking questions into the void, wandering around with his recorder, and occasionally muttering about spikes on his EMF detector. I stayed back, monitoring the equipment. The night was uneventful, like most of our outings. A few creaks from the old wood, the occasional gust of wind rattling through the broken windows, and Mark muttering, "Did you hear that?" every few minutes. Around midnight, we packed up and left. It was just another night of chasing shadows in an empty house, or so I thought. A week later, Mark called me over to his place to review the audio. It was a routine I knew well. Hours of static, muffled footsteps, and the occasional rustle of clothing or distant animal noises. We were about halfway through when Mark froze. "Wait," he said, holding up a hand. "Go back." "What was that?" I rewound the clip. At first, I didn't hear anything unusual. "Right there," he said, pointing at the screen. I cranked up the volume and leaned in. And then I heard it. Faint at first, barely a whisper beneath the static. A sound that didn't belong in an abandoned farmhouse. A piano. It wasn't a random plink of keys or some distorted noise that could be dismissed as coincidence. It was a melody, slow, deliberate, and haunting. Mark and I stared at each other, wide-eyed. "There wasn't a piano in that house," I said, my voice barely above a whisper. "There wasn't even power," Mark added. I pulled up the clip in Goldwave, my go-to sound editing software, and started cleaning it up. I removed the static, boosted the frequency range, and isolated the sound. The melody became clearer, more defined. It was beautiful in a strange, unsettling way, like an old lullaby you'd hear in a dream and forget the moment you woke up. The most chilling part? It faded in and out, as if someone were sitting at an actual piano, playing softly. The dynamics were too precise to be an accidental recording. "There's no way this is possible," I muttered, running a hand through my hair. We didn't hear it when we were in the house. No piano, no music, nothing. The equipment had picked it up, but our ears hadn't. And the nearest neighbor, a mile away. Even if they'd been playing a piano, which was absurd given the distance, it wouldn't have sounded like this. Mark leaned back in his chair, rubbing his temples. "What do you think it is?" I didn't answer. I didn't have an answer. We sat in silence, listening to the clip over and over again. Each time the melody seemed to dig deeper into my skin, leaving a cold, heavy weight in my chest. "Let's try to figure out what it's playing," Mark suggested, pulling out his laptop. He was into music theory and thought maybe the notes would give us a clue. But when he tried to transcribe it, he stopped halfway through, his face pale. "What's wrong?" I asked. He shook his head, his voice unsteady. "It's not right. The intervals, the progression, it's like it doesn't belong. It doesn't follow any rules." We didn't talk much after that. Mark saved the file and I went home. I told myself it was just a strange anomaly, something explainable that we'd overlooked. But that night I couldn't sleep. The melody played over and over in my mind, each note like a ghostly whisper in the dark. The next day, Mark called me. "Ben, the file's gone," he said, his voice trembling. "What do you mean, gone?" "It's not on my computer. It's not on the backup drive either. It's just gone." I checked my own laptop. The copy I'd made was missing too. Every trace of the recording had vanished. To this day, I can't explain what we heard. I've been over every logical possibility, radio interference, some kind of audio glitch, even a prank, but nothing fits. The melody, that impossible piano in the middle of nowhere, still haunts me. I haven't gone ghost hunting with Mark since. Story 8. It was a bitterly cold January night, the kind where the silence outside presses against the windows, suffocating the house in an almost tangible stillness. I was wide awake at 4 a.m., seated at my desk in my study, unable to sleep after a particularly intense night of ritual work. The air still felt charged from it, humming faintly, though I'd properly closed the space and cleared it afterward, or so I thought. The house was old, its creaks and groans familiar, but there was a weight to the atmosphere that I couldn't shake. It felt as if the walls themselves were breathing, their sighs faint but deliberate. I told myself it was just my heightened senses after working through the night, the adrenaline slowly fading. But then I heard it, something downstairs. At first it was subtle, a faint shuffle, like someone brushing against the wooden floor. I froze, listening intently, holding my breath. The sound came again, louder this time. It wasn't random, like the settling of a house. It was deliberate, a measured step, then another. Something, or someone, was walking around down there. My first thought was an intruder. Heart pounding, I grabbed the heavy brass candle holder from the desk, its weight comforting in my hand. Slowly, I crept toward the door. My bare feet made no sound on the cold floorboards as I moved into the dark hallway. The house seemed darker than usual, the shadows deeper, as if the night had crawled inside and taken residence in the corners. I stood at the top of the staircase, peering down into the black void below. "Who's there?" My voice sounded steadier than I felt, though it barely carried over the oppressive silence. No answer, just more shuffling, closer now. Then, the unmistakable sound of something scraping against the floor, a dragging sound, like claws or nails raking across wood. I forced myself to descend, each step a deliberate effort against the mounting dread clawing at my chest. As I reached the bottom, the air grew heavier, almost suffocating. The open-plan living room stretched out before me, the faint glow of streetlights filtering in through the thin curtains. Nothing seemed out of place, but the air felt wrong. It was thick with a presence, a weight that pressed against my skin and filled my ears with a low, almost imperceptible hum. Then I saw it. In the far corner of the room, near the old oak cabinet, something moved. At first I thought it was a shadow, a trick of the light. But shadows don't breathe. Shadows don't have weight. My eyes adjusted, and I realized it was hunched, small but solid, its form indistinct yet undeniably physical. It had no discernible features, just a vaguely humanoid shape, dark and pulsing, as if it were absorbing the surrounding light. I froze, clutching the candle holder so tightly my knuckles ached. My mouth went dry. It wasn't moving, but I could feel its attention on me, a palpable force that made my skin crawl. "What do you want?" I managed to croak, my voice trembling. It didn't respond, but something shifted, a ripple like the air between us bending, and then it stood, or rather, unfolded. What I had assumed was small and hunched was now towering, its form stretching upward in an impossible, jerky motion. It didn't make a sound, but the pressure in the room intensified, as if the walls were closing in. My instincts screamed at me to run, but I was rooted to the spot, paralyzed by a mix of terror and fascination. Then came the voice, not out loud but inside my head, a deep, guttural whisper that felt like it was clawing at my brain. "You called?" "No," I stammered, shaking my head violently. "No, I didn't. You're not supposed to be here." My words felt pathetic, feeble against the weight of its presence. The rituals I had performed earlier hadn't involved summoning. They were protective, meant to strengthen boundaries, not breach them. But something had clearly gone wrong. It began to move toward me, its steps soundless, yet reverberating through my chest. I scrambled backward, my mind racing through every banishing and warding technique I'd ever learned. My training kicked in, despite the panic threatening to overwhelm me. I raised the candle holder like a talisman, muttering a string of protective invocations under my breath. For a moment it paused, tilting its head, or what I assumed was its head, toward me. The air around it seemed to shimmer, like heat rising from asphalt. It was studying me, its form flickering, as if caught between this plane and another. I don't know if it was the words or the intent behind them, but it hesitated. That hesitation was all I needed. I darted toward the altar in the adjoining room, my bare feet skidding on the polished floor. The tools were still laid out from earlier. The wand, the salt, the sigil I had traced meticulously. My hands shook as I grabbed the salt, forming a quick circle around myself and the altar. The creature, or entity, whatever it was, hovered in the doorway, its form writhing like smoke caught in a draft. "This is my space," I said louder now, my voice gaining strength. "You are not welcome here. Return to where you came from." The words felt hollow at first, but as I repeated them, something shifted. The air grew colder, the oppressive weight lifting slightly. The thing recoiled, its form flickering faster, as if it were struggling to maintain its presence. I poured more salt at the threshold, reinforcing the barrier. It let out a sound then, a low, guttural growl that reverberated through the house, shaking the walls. And then, just as suddenly as it had appeared, it was gone. The room fell silent, the air still and lifeless. My hands were trembling, my heart pounding so hard I thought it might burst. I stayed in that circle for what felt like hours, repeating the banishment until I was sure it wouldn't return. When the first light of dawn broke through the curtains, I finally dared to step out of the circle. The house felt different, quieter than before, but the oppressive weight was gone. I inspected the ritual space upstairs later that morning, finding nothing out of place except a faint scorch mark on the floor where I had performed the protective rites. A reminder, perhaps, of how thin the veil between worlds truly is, and how easily it can be breached. I still don't know what it was. A reflection of my own energy, a rogue elemental, something else entirely? Whatever it was, it taught me a lesson I won't soon forget. The forces we work with are not to be taken lightly. Even the smallest misstep can invite things we are not prepared to face, and sometimes they come uninvited. Story 9. It was a cold autumn night, the kind where the air smells like damp earth and dying leaves. I was in my early 20s, reckless and full of stupid ideas. My two best friends, Mike and Jordan, shared my appetite for dumb decisions, which is how we ended up on those train tracks that led to the abandoned coal mine on the outskirts of town. Mike had been there before, last week in fact with another buddy, and he swore the place was a gold mine for creepy thrills. The mine had been shut down for decades, just another relic of our town's industrial past. We climbed through a jagged hole in the fence, already cut from Mike's last visit. He whispered something about how no one ever comes out here anymore. But his words got swallowed by the silence. A thick, oppressive kind of quiet hung over the place, broken only by the faint crunch of gravel underfoot. It was darker than I expected. The towering structures around us were massive silhouettes blotting out the stars, their jagged shapes barely distinguishable from the black sky. I couldn't tell what was a silo, a conveyor tower, or something else entirely. Occasionally, I caught the faint rustle of wings, probably pigeons, but it didn't stop the uneasy itch crawling up my spine. We pressed on, skirting around the edges of gaping doorways and yawning chutes. Our goal wasn't just to snoop around the mine. Mike had a bigger plan in mind. In the middle of the yard was a hill with an old World War II bunker on it. The town was surrounded by abandoned military installations, but this one was different, hidden, decaying, and completely off the radar. It was the kind of place no one in their right mind would mess with. Naturally, that made it irresistible. About halfway to the hill, I started hearing it, a faint metallic tapping coming from behind us. Tink, tink, tink. It wasn't loud, but it was consistent. I chalked it up to the wind rattling something loose, maybe a rusted sign swinging on its hinges. Jordan, who was bringing up the rear, said he couldn't hear anything. We pushed on, climbing the hill as quietly as we could. The tapping stayed with us, distant but deliberate, as if someone or something was matching our pace. The bunker was a hulking concrete beast buried in the hill. There was an entrance, but none of us had the guts to go inside. Instead, we circled around the back, where we found a hole with a rusted ladder leading down into a lower level. It looked like a black maw waiting to swallow us whole. We stood there, boxed in by the steep drop-offs on either side and the bunker's walls. The wind tugged at our jackets, and that damn tapping sound hadn't stopped. It was closer now, echoing faintly from the dark. Mike pulled out a joint, figuring this was as good a place as any to take a breather. I crouched down, fumbling with a lighter, the cold wind making it impossible to get a flame. The tapping was getting under my skin. Tink, tink, tink. I turned to Mike. You hear that, right? What the hell is it? He shrugged, but his face was tense. Jordan shifted uneasily, muttering something about the wind. The lighter finally caught, and for a split second, the flame lit up our little corner of the world. That's when everything changed. The tapping exploded into a deafening boom, boom, boom. It was the sound of something heavy pounding down metal stairs, rapid and unrelenting. My first thought was security guards. They must have seen the flash of my lighter, and now they were charging down from one of the towers to catch us. Run! I hissed. We didn't run, though. We crouched, frozen, listening to the pounding. It was getting louder, closer, impossibly fast. My heart was hammering in my chest as I tried to make sense of it. The noise wasn't coming from the towers. It was circling us. How the hell is it moving so fast? Jordan whispered, his voice barely audible. None of it made sense. The pounding seemed to echo from all directions, but no one appeared. No flashlights, no voices, no footsteps on gravel. Just that relentless, thunderous boom, boom, boom. Mike motioned for us to move. We slipped down the hill, keeping low, and started weaving through the yard, heading for the fence we'd come through. But the noise didn't stay behind. It followed us, shifting position, always just out of sight. When we reached the gravel road leading to the exit, we stopped dead. The pounding was coming from the road ahead of us. Whatever it was between us and the fence. Backtrack, I whispered, my throat dry. No time, Mike hissed. We go over the fence. We turned and bolted towards the far side of the yard, where rows of empty coal train cars sat rusting in the dark. As we slipped between them, the pounding stopped. For a second, I thought we were in the clear. We slowed, catching our breath, and Mike muttered something about the noise being in our heads. That's when the first train car exploded with sound, a deafening boom that rattled the rails. It wasn't just one car. It spread, the noise rolling down the line, each car roaring as if something massive was slamming into it. We ran. I didn't look back. I didn't want to know what was behind us. I vaulted the 10-foot fence like it was nothing, my adrenaline turning fear into pure instinct. When we hit the road, we didn't stop running until the mine was a distant memory, swallowed by the night. None of us said a word the entire way home. We never went back. Mike refused to talk about it after that night, and Jordan moved out of town a year later. Story 10. It happened when I was living in a small apartment in Zurich. The place wasn't much to look at. A cramped, boxy studio with just enough space for a bed, a desk, a sink, and a tiny balcony. The building was old, its walls thick enough to muffle even the loudest city noises, and the windows didn't open. It was the kind of place where the air felt stale, and you could almost sense the weight of time pressing against the walls. But rent was cheap, and in Switzerland, that meant a lot. It started on a Sunday morning. I'd woken up groggy as usual, shuffled to the sink near the balcony, and glanced in the mirror. My hair was a mess, so I grabbed a comb and reached for my toothbrush. That's when I noticed something odd. One of my plants, a small spider plant in a ceramic pot near the balcony door, was swaying as though caught in a breeze. It didn't make sense. The balcony door was closed. I remember staring at it, my mind grasping for logical explanations. Maybe I'd bumped the table earlier. Maybe the building's old ventilation system was blowing air in somehow. But no, there was no draft. I stepped closer to the plant, my bare feet brushing against the cold floor. The door was locked tight, its metal latch firmly in place. I even tugged it to be sure, still locked. When I turned back toward the mirror, something else caught my eye, a pen lying on my desk. It was nothing special, just an ordinary black pen, the kind I used to scribble notes or make grocery lists. But for some reason, it drew my attention. It was lying at an odd angle, not where I'd left it the night before. I frowned and dismissed it. "You're imagining things," I muttered to myself. Sleep deprivation had a way of playing tricks on you, after all. But as soon as I got back to the mirror, my stomach dropped. There were pen markings on my face. At first, I thought it was some smudge I'd accidentally rubbed onto myself in my sleep. But no, these were deliberate, chaotic scribbles, lines crisscrossing my cheeks, looping around my nose, cutting across my forehead. They weren't faint either. They were dark and sharp, etched into my skin like a child's furious doodles. My heart stopped. I blinked rapidly, trying to process what I was seeing. My hands shot up to my face, tracing the marks. The ink felt dry and smooth beneath my fingertips. The room seemed to close in on me. I felt a prickling sensation along the back of my neck, like someone or something was watching me. "No," I whispered. "No, no, no." My eyes darted around the room. The balcony door was still shut. The pen was still on the desk. The plant had stopped moving. There was no one else here. But there had to be. Someone had to have done this. I couldn't explain it any other way. I hadn't gone to bed with ink on my face. That wasn't something you just missed. I grabbed a washcloth, soaked it under the tap, and scrubbed my skin until it was raw. The markings came off easily enough, but that only made it worse. If it was this easy to clean, then why didn't I notice it sooner? I stared at myself in the mirror, my breath coming in short, shallow gasps. My reflection looked pale and terrified, as though I'd seen a ghost. Maybe I had. I fled the room after that. I didn't even stop to grab my jacket. I just grabbed my keys, slipped into my shoes, and bolted. Outside, the air was crisp and biting. The city was quiet, the streets almost empty. I found a cafe a few blocks away and ordered a coffee, my hands trembling as I handed over the money. I sat there for hours trying to convince myself it was nothing, that I had imagined it all. Eventually, I worked up the courage to go back. The sun was setting by the time I returned to the apartment. My steps felt heavy, each one a struggle against the growing dread in my chest. When I unlocked the door, the first thing I noticed was the balcony. The door was open. Not just unlocked, open, wide open, the curtains billowing slightly as a faint breeze drifted in. I froze. I knew I'd locked it. I was sure of it. My fingers gripped the edge of the doorframe as I stared into the dim interior. Nothing looked out of place. The plant was still there, its leaves still now. The pen was still on the desk, but the air felt wrong. It was colder than it should have been, and there was a faint smell, something metallic and sour, like rust. I stepped inside cautiously, my heart hammering in my chest. Every instinct screamed at me to turn around and leave, but I couldn't. I had to know. I walked over to the balcony door and shut it firmly. I checked the lock again, testing it over and over until I was certain it was secure. Then I turned back toward the room and froze. The pen was gone. The desk was empty, wiped clean as though it had never been there in the first place. I backed away slowly, my pulse thundering in my ears. My eyes darted to the sink, then to the mirror. And that's when I saw it. In the reflection, behind me, there was something standing near the balcony door. I didn't see its face, just a shadowy outline, tall and thin, its head tilted slightly as though watching me. I didn't turn around. I didn't want to see it. I bolted for the door, my hands fumbling with the lock, my breath coming in ragged gas. When I finally made it out into the hallway, I didn't stop. I ran down the stairs out of the building and into the night. I never went back. To this day, I can't explain what happened. I moved out the next week, breaking my lease and paying the penalty without a second thought. Thanks for watching. Don't leave before leaving a like to this video. Also, hit the subscribe button to support my work. And as always, have a horrific nightmare, my dear.
From a meeting at the office to a big first date, there's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every event. But clothes don't make the man. So why stuff your closet with things that only work for some situations? With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting. Their clothing is understated and tells the world that you stay you wherever you go. They craft each piece by combining timeless style and modern performance materials, so you can stay looking good and feeling comfortable from morning to evening. No wardrobe changes required. Browse everything from summer-ready tech linen shorts and anti-odor polos to tailored sweats and crews for a night in. They can outfit you for anything, no matter what's on your agenda for the day. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MACK25.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look great. What have you been doing?
I found Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe the same active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s for 80 to 90% less without insurance. All of mine shipped right to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's care to #250.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.